This is XN Anderson. Welcome today to the Principal Podcast. Today, I am absolutely excited to have my friend and good, wonderful person, Bryce Barrett. Bryce Barrett, he grew up in Utah. He lived in Mexico, Oregon each for 2 years. He's graduating with a PhD from Oregon State University this year, and he has a YouTube channel on faith-based topics called The Mighty Change. So you can check out his channel, short form and long form videos that he has. He's a husband and a father, and I know he values that. He also, one of the unique things about Bryce is he has written in his journal daily for the past 16 years, which I absolutely admire. Wish that I had done the same. But Bryce, thank you for being on the show and welcome today.
Yeah, thanks so much. Excited to be here.
One of the things we're going to talk about today is faith and struggles with faith. And of course, what we're going to talk about today may not apply to every person, so we want to be sensitive to that. But we're talking about things that, where when someone has a spiritual experience or a spiritual conviction, they feel something that very strongly spiritually, but later they doubt it. And we want to clarify, some of you may who are listening may not have had spiritual experiences, but that's what we're going to be talking about today is people who have had a spiritual experience and felt strongly, but then later doubted that. So my question for you, Bryce, is what's the typical explanation for past spiritual experiences among those who leave their faith?
Yeah, thanks, Xane. And like you said, I want to also share at the beginning of this, right, that the faith is a our each of our faith journeys and us figuring things out in this life, right, is unique. And there are a lot of factors that influence it. But like you said, I think there are some very important considerations when discussing faith that can help us kind of frame and understand better our own journeys, right? And to be aware of things and pitfalls that we might fall into. Because what you're saying when you're to answer your question, a very common narrative is, that when people leave the faith, maybe it was just because they had faith in the first place because of social situations or of kind of their own kind of a mentality living in their own reality, kind of a placebo effect. And that when they leave the faith, they're starting to see clearly, or they start to see objective reality through more clear eyes, right? And that faith in that context and this kind of argument was something that was kind of blinding people to seeing things clearly, if that makes sense. I think we've all heard that to one degree or another.
Right. So a lot of people who leave faith, they say, well, goodness, I see clearly now. It was just, I just felt emotional. I was just being emotional, or the cult had brainwashed me or something like that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And those are typical explanations. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. And so what I wanted to discuss today, I think is very valuable in this kind of topic, and something I've considered a lot, is how we can make sense both from a faith-based perspective as well as from a psychological and science-based perspective on how this process might happen, how sometimes we may doubt our faith, or sometimes have spiritual experiences which we've had that are kind of a basis of our testimony or faith, can sometimes feel a little bit faded over time. We might doubt those experiences, or we might see them through new eyes, or kind of a bittersweet feel, right? When we are going through these experiences. And what I want to focus on today is that these changes aren't necessarily that we're coming to see clearly so much as it's a natural process, even biological process of us and our memories working over time, right? I think all of us understand that we have imperfect mortal bodies, right? And a part of that imperfection is that we easily forget things. I can't tell me how many times I'll walk into a room, look around, and then I forget why I went in there, right? And then, or there's just small details about everyday life, right? That I think back and, just one day to the next, I can't remember sometimes what I did the day before. And so our memories play a big role, and I think they play a big role in our faith and in our convictions as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think you're right. We are imperfect, and you know, sometimes you meet somebody that you remember their name, and then you see them later, and you think, I know their name, but I can't remember their name. I don't remember, or as you said, you know, I can't remember being in the same room. So what you're saying is, you know, these interpretations that people feel like when they leave the faith that they're waking up, that they're coming to clear see clearly, actually may have more to do with a little bit of a forgetting process. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's important to distinguish between two sides of things, right? From a faith-based context, there's a spiritual side of things, and I think that's important. The spiritual side of things for those who believe, I think, helps us validate the experiences we have. We feel something that's beyond just the physical, right? Something that we feel like is trustworthy. And if there is a God and he has that ability to reach out to us, then it would make sense that he'd give us the ability to recognize that, right? And so that is one aspect of things. But the other aspect of things falls in line really well with science and psychology, and that's the memory of those experiences, right? Those memories are what we hold on to, but those memories are kind of fragile. Over time, they can fade, and there are certain mechanisms and certain processes that happen with those memories, and that's a little bit of what we were going to get into today that I think is really insightful and can really help change the perspective a little bit on this loss of faith and doubt that is not always seen objectively or clearly, but oftentimes it's actually maybe dimming the lights on past experiences or changing the memories a little bit, or having those fade, which then influence our future, right? And maybe where we are currently.
Interesting. So let's talk about that. So, Bryce, what factors influence forgetting? I mean, is time the only reason we forget?
Okay, yeah, great question. First of all, I think it's important to establish a little bit of the processes of memory, right? So when you have a significant experience, and spiritual experiences are sometimes compared to these kind of light bulb memories, experiences like 9/11 or other big events where you have a very vivid memory of where you were, what you were doing, experiences like that in your life, right? These experiences are recorded in your brain, in the hippocampus, your memory center, and they leave a trace, a physical trace. You know, the neurons and the paths and the physical aspect of it is there, just like muscles. And just like muscles too, if you don't use it, you lose it. There's a kind of atrophy, and so I think we'll get into that a little bit more here later on. But these memories are recorded in your brain, and with such emotional and powerful memories like spiritual experiences, they're often recorded pretty strong at first. But like you said, over time, memories can fade, especially if they're not used, if they're not remembered, if they're not shared. We'll discuss that more later. But that's the first kind of process, this passive forgetting, right? That happens just naturally over time. And I think it's interesting. There's a study, and I'll explain this little graph for those who are listening. But there's a study showing the kind of rate of forgetting, right? And we'll discuss later, but this graph basically just shows kind of a curve from remembering, you know, 100% at the beginning to, you know, one day maybe it drops down to like 80%, 2 days later 60%, 3 days later 20%. And so there's this kind of gradual decline in how we remember things. And now spiritual experiences are pretty powerful, so those might linger a little bit longer than what is typical, right? But this still has an effect. Later we'll discuss too maybe some things we can do to help out memory, because this fading, there's things we can do to help it out. But I think it's important to recognize in the beginning that this is one of the factors that influences our memory and forgetting.
So what I'm hearing you say is when we have a kind of these light bulb experiences where they're emotional, like you mentioned 9/11, where most people can tell you where they were on 9/11 if they were alive during that time, because it was such a shocking kind of emotional experience or vivid experience that it actually is encoded into, like, there's neural pathways in our brains, in the memory center, that are made, but you're still over time going to lose some of that memory just because of passive memory decay. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, that is correct. And it's interesting too, because there's a theory and a study that was done called the fading effect bias. And not all memories fade equally too. And this would even suggest the study showed that the emotion behind memories that is negative fades faster than positive. So positive memories should stay around longer than negative memories. And in fact, I had an experience when I was, in my, I was probably 5, 6, 7 years old, where I think we can all relate to this. I would remember Christmas and the activities on Christmas, getting new toys, everything that would happen with such a positive and optimistic. I would look forward to Christmas so much every year. But I kind of got really disappointed and bothered because every year I'd get to Christmas and it was just never as I remembered it. It was always disappointing after, the first few Christmases where I got my expectations up. And I just wondered so much, like, why is this happening? Why is every Christmas not what I expect? And I think it has a lot to do actually with this mechanism that happens. The positive memories, and I think to our benefit in many cases, are what we hold on to more, right? We remember those more. We can see a little bit the good in the past better than the bad, right? That can maybe help us move forward. When we have that in mind, that can help us shape our expectations for the future a little bit. In regards to the spiritual experiences, I think it's important to recognize that we can't always force spiritual experiences, but we can set up an environment that can foster those experiences happening.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about expectations. I'm glad you brought this up, Bryce. If you have expectations that are high, and then you sense that your reality is lower, the distance between these two, I call it frustration, right? So if I expect something
Oh,
from you that's up here and you're delivering down here, if I expect something from maybe when I go to the store, I expect a special experience or something from a relationship. But if my reality comes in lower anywhere, the distance between this high expectation and this lower reality, I call frustration. And so if we're expecting, as you said, our spiritual life or our relationship to be right here, and then things come in lower, we're frustrated. Now, on the other hand, we can control what we expect. So sometimes, even in relationships, and sometimes, I get a little bit of flack for saying this, but sometimes expecting reality, like saying, okay, I'm going to expect what's actually real to be there, then that frustration goes away. Now, from a relationship, well, we'll add this in here real quick. From a relationship standpoint, if we can exceed people's expectations, in other words, make their reality higher than what they're expecting. So now I flip the lines, right? So instead of having expectations high and reality low, now I have reality high and expectations low. This distance now becomes delight. It becomes, I'm excited to be with you. But I think when you're saying, hey, if I really expect every single Christmas to be this magical experience, and then it comes in a little lower, I'm frustrated, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, this is something, expectations is something that I've considered for a long time. And both from a scriptural standpoint, 'cause I think there are times when this comes out, as well as from my own life experiences, I've kind of developed a different paradigm for expectations, and that's, to hope for the best, plan for the worst, but to expect to learn and grow from everything, especially in faith in God or in Christ, in beliefs. I think that can make even hard experiences turn together for our good, right?
There you go. So it's not expecting a pain-free life. It's expecting, hey, there's going to be some challenges. There's going to be some pain. There's going to be some trials. But I can still have a positive attitude about that rather than saying, hey, because I have this pain and trials, I've been robbed. Like I expect a perfect life and it's not happening. So I'm now disappointed because I've been robbed. If you say, you know what, we expect life is going to be difficult, but we're still going to have the attitude that this difficultness, this hardness, this pain that we sometimes experience is in the long run going to work out for our good. It's a great attitude to have.
Yeah, and I like something that you mentioned too about relationships, because in the end, relationships with wives, or a husband, right, or relationships with our close family is very similar. There are a lot of parallels too with our relationship with God or with deity. And I think expectations plays a big role into those relationships. And that's a whole nother topic that we can, I think is worthwhile thinking about in regards to our faith and our experiences as well. But I think it's interesting to note that parallel. I think we'll see that parallel in some of the other things we discuss later too.
Thanks for that. Well, so let's get back a little bit to memories. When we're talking about memories, like why do strong memories somehow fade and sometimes even sour? And it would suggest that positive spiritual memories persist strongly over time, but we still see that they can sometimes fade, and they can even take on, sometimes a negative, bittersweet kind of maybe a nostalgic feel. Why is that?
I think it's more of this active forgetting rather than a passive forgetting. Instead of memories just fading, I think there are some motivations and some things that go on within inside of us and our brains even that can motivate our forgetting. One of those, and kind of maybe a focal point of this, has to do with the why behind it, which is cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance means that your beliefs, whether it be two separate beliefs or beliefs and your actions, how you behave, how you live versus what you believe. When those are in conflict with each other, there's this kind of dissonance. There's this kind of discomfort that one can feel. And that discomfort motivates us. It can motivate kind of two different paths, right? Changing the beliefs or changing the actions. Or if they're between two different beliefs, needing to kind of decide which one we're going to hold on to and maybe which one we're going to let go, right?
That's right. So this, the one that's really, as you said, this distance between what am I doing and what do I believe? And from my study of psychology, at some point, it gets so uncomfortable that people will go one way or the other. They'll either go one more, towards what they're doing, or one towards what they believed in the past. So if I have a faith that tells me to do certain actions, but I'm not choosing to live in accordance with that faith, it's really uncomfortable. And I'm either going to go back to living that faith, or I'm going to start making my faith match up with my actions, which in other words means I might try to actively forget so that I can justify what I'm doing. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, for sure. And different studies support that. There's a think no think paradigm, a study that was done showing that people that were given various kind of little words or things to remember, they were told, okay, remember this one, but don't remember this one. And so they were actively instructed on what they should remember and what they shouldn't remember. And in the end, those things which they were told not to remember that they actively tried not to remember, they had a hard time remembering, even though they had the same exposure to both things, right? And in regards to faith, I think that demonstrates how our brains can actively work against memories that are uncomfortable or that we instruct them, whether it be consciously or subconsciously, because I think this happens a lot without us knowing it's happening, to suppress or alter those memories. Memories are kind of made and change over time when we recall them. We recall them in a circumstance where we feel uncomfortable with them. In that very act, that can kind of modify that memory a little bit and our perspective toward that memory. And if that's in regards to past spiritual experiences, and if we feel a conflict, whether it be like we said before, with different beliefs, or with specifically our actions, if something's not in line, but we're not maybe quite ready to change that, but we feel that discomfort, then, naturally that might start to affect our beliefs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This principle that you're talking about, Bryce, is so fascinating because it can work for good or for evil. I mean, you're saying that, if I'm not living in accordance with this faith that I've had in the past, I can actually bring my feelings of faith, I can kind of actively forget them and lead my feelings in a way that I didn't have before. At the same time, this same principle can be used for good. I had a friend named Brody, and Brody told me that he did this workout called the Spartacus workout, I think it was. And he said he hated it. He goes, he didn't feel like doing it. He didn't want to do it, but he committed to do it. So he did it. And he goes, I got to the end of this workout and I hated it. I was so sore, I could barely walk, but I committed to do it. So I did it again the next way and I still hated it. I did it again the next day and I still hated it. I did it again the next day and I still hated it. He goes, I kept doing it because I'd committed to do it. But he goes, it was really interesting because right around week 2.5 or 3, something changed. I did this workout. And by the end of the workout, for the first time, the thing that changed is I felt good and I wanted to do the workout again. And so I did the workout again that day. And he goes, it happened again the next day. I got to the end of the workout and I wanted to do it. And it was really interesting. I said, you know exactly which day it was? He goes, I don't, but it was around week 2.5 or 3. And you see, he used the same principle to lead his feelings. In other words, he did the workout because he committed to do it. And as he did it, his feelings and his desire and his thoughts about the workout actually followed his actions. So he led his feelings and thoughts with his actions, and it followed. So in that situation, it could be a positive thing. But if we have these faith experiences and we're saying, hey, look, I'm now not going to follow them, those same feelings and thoughts can be led in a different direction because we can lead our thinking and our feelings with our behaviors.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this dissonance that we feel, this discomfort, and in regards to behavior, it can be, kind of a sense of guilt of having your morals and your actions not in line, is really hard to live with. And it motivates us to make a change one way or the other. One thing that I realized too, and that's been really present to me, is that in our day and age, cultures vary around the world, but in general, things are pretty fast paced and it's hard to make time. You have to be intentional to make time for spiritual things, for kind of these things that matter most. And if you don't, your brain, your conscious, subconscious, without you even maybe knowing it, might kind of choose for itself and say, hey, this is really uncomfortable. We've been here a long time. Like, we got to do something about it. Maybe I'm going to start to change, a little bit of those beliefs and memories. Maybe that's the easier route. Maybe that's the more passive route than having to interrupt your busy schedule, right? And have to take time to figure things out, both in a behavioral standpoint, if there are things that don't align, or even just from a belief standpoint, maybe there are things about your faith in past history topics that you don't understand. Maybe there are leaders or other people of your faith who haven't lived the principles of the faith, and there's kind of a conflict in morals and in that perspective. Trauma in the past can also be another one. There are different things, and I want that to be clear too, that there's a lot of different influences, and I know there's even more beyond that, right? But these things, one way or another, if they're causing this dissonance, and if we're not taking time to address it in a healthy and good manner with a perspective of faith, then over time that might eventually, our brains, our spirits may try to figure that out by itself. And that might not always be to our benefit, right?
That's right. So what we're saying is our mind can suppress and reframe our experiences of the past because it wants to reduce that uncomfortable conflict inside. And so that it can minimize, it can reinterpret our past faith to match kind of what we're doing. So if I'm doing something that's in the past, I would have thought was maybe a little bit off or even wrong, there's enough conflict that if I don't proactively address it, my mind is still going to work behind the scenes to fix it, and sometimes to my detriment. Is that right? I mean, it's almost self-deception to justify what I'm doing. And so if we're not actively remembering, if we're not actively, you talked about being busy. We're not, we're so busy sometimes everything, our phones are ringing, our emails are dinging, all kinds of things are happening. And so we've had these profound spiritual experiences. And maybe, as you said, we have someone who we respect who's now left the faith, or we have someone in our family who's doubting and we're starting to doubt a little bit, or we have one of our friends who's doubting. And if we start listening and having these experiences where we're saying, okay, I know I had this profound spiritual experience, but now I'm seeing all this other stuff and I'm starting to doubt. and I'm having this kind of internal conflict. So I'm going to now, if I don't proactively address it, my mind wants to get rid of this conflict. And so it's going to work behind the scenes to try to fix it anyway, because that cognitive people are going to go one way or the other. The mind doesn't want to live in this dissonant state, and that can result in self-deception.
Yeah, for sure. No, and it's like putting on glasses, right, that have a little bit more distortion. We're changing our perspective of things from what was, a reality in our lives, those experiences and things that which did happen. And when we're in that conflict, we might say, okay, let's to feel more comfortable, let's change that perspective. But that perspective change isn't necessarily seen more clearly. It can actually be clouding those past experiences, which did happen, which are legitimate, and then seeing through lenses that are a little bit more distorted, even if that makes sense. And something that you mentioned, if we hold to the path and we keep going through those experiences and we make some time for these things, I think we can avoid falling into the self-deception. We can address these issues and give them time. There was a somebody who I like to follow, and she mentioned a really cool little parallel. I think there are a lot of stories which are pretty well known that have some good principles in them. I think that's why they're well known and liked. And in this case, it's Harry Potter, where in the last in one of the last books of Harry Potter, he starts to learn about Dumbledore and his history. And Dumbledore at this point in time has already died. And he learns about a lot of things that kind of question his character and the past. But he doesn't leave the path. He doesn't, discard everything and all of the experiences which he did have with him. But he does hold to the path. And over time, he figures out and answers those questions, and the truth of his good character eventually come out, and he's able to reconcile and figure that out. But he does it because he keeps going forward with faith. And I really like that. I think that's a key point, that when we come into these conflicts, whether it be beliefs or our actions, then it's important to be able to keep moving forward. And over time, those answers will come. And we just need to give them time, and we need to give them some of our time each day to be able to address them, right? So that those that dissonance can be worked on, but from a good way.
I like that. And being able to have the faith going forward. So I think you're exactly right. Maybe sometimes when people claim that they are seen objectively now, that maybe it really isn't them seen objectively. Maybe it's just trying to emotionally self-preserve.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's often a subconscious, it's something that maybe we don't completely recognize, because we are trying to kind of minimize those memories and things. I mean, to really believe it, we've got to kind of be oblivious to it, and if that makes sense. And so I think what you're saying is correct. Instead of us having certain beliefs change and then changing our behavior, it can often happen where maybe some of our behavior is not quite in line with our beliefs, and then our beliefs follow that change in behavior. Right. And so it's not so much us coming to see clearly as it is us coming to change our beliefs because of some external factor that isn't, objective reality.
Right. We may try to justify it as, hey, now I see clearly, but what you really did is you're kind of having spiritual amnesia.
Yeah. And I think that's a great term for it. This spiritual amnesia is kind of, us and our forgetful state, our mortal state. And the conflicts that we come into play with here in this life that we're trying to figure out, if we don't address those, and if we don't do it in a healthy way, then we can forget, and that forgetting can be motivated by our decisions, our actions, or inaction.
Yeah, that makes sense. So here's my next question, Bryce. So what can we do to prevent this, active forgetting, the spiritual amnesia, either happening passively or actively? What can we do?
Yeah, I think this is a great thing to discuss, because I think there are a lot of things that we talked previously, right, about how our memory, just from a memory standpoint, is like muscles, right? The different pathways in our brain work like muscles. So if we constantly revisit those in various ways, those can be strengthened. I first want to discuss, like we talked about, the fading effect, right? Well, different studies that built off of the fading effect and how we passively forget over time show that whenever we come back to remember something, and the more frequently, the better, the more that memory is retained over time. And there's like a little chart I'm sure anyone can go and look at, that's often taught in psychology, where if we jump into, so if we're trying to remember something, like this happened to me with names. First of all, I want to share just how much I am a believer that intentionally working to remember people's names makes such a big difference. It's just a little nod saying, hey, you're significant enough, you're important enough to me to remember your name, right? That's made a big difference in my life, something I continue working on. As I used to say, I used to always say, oh, I'm terrible at names. And I had to stop myself and change myself for that. But I would actually do something when I started working on this, like, okay, I've got to figure this out. So I would meet somebody new. I would get my watch after I walked away and I'd say, okay, set a timer for 30 seconds. When the timer went off, I'm like, okay, his name was Jack. Okay, good. Got it once. Okay, set a timer for
How
2 minutes.
would you actively remember it? You're practicing building that neural pathway, correct?
Exactly. I'm trying to follow like this graph, so to speak, right? Where it's like, okay, if I hit these different times, and what I found for me, and I think what a lot of research shows is, if you do it frequently at the beginning, and then a little, you can be a little bit less frequent as time goes on, right? So like 30 seconds, you remember his name. Okay, set a timer for 2 minutes, and then you remember his name again. And then set a timer for, 10 minutes. And then you think about his name. At that point in time, you thought about it a few times. And so you're getting it. So you can maybe set it a little bit longer the next, half day, a few hours later, then a week, a few weeks, a month, a year. If you slowly kind of stretch that out, then you can remember better. And so I think the principle behind this, and it's amazing to look into scripture and faith in general, because remember comes up so much. And it's not just because, we need to continually learn, which is true as well, and be able to reflect on these things constantly. But there's actually, even neurologically in our mortal bodies, a mechanism that remembering and taking time to remember these things reinforces and helps us to hold on to those memories and remember what they were like, and help us to also touch base on the spiritual side of things and say, okay, I knew I had a spiritual experience. Maybe you can come under doubt of whether that was valid or not. But if you have another spiritual experience and you feel it's valid, then that's another touch point. That's another stepping stone, right? And if you keep working on that, remembering and having new experiences, that kind of builds a path where that becomes more and more reinforced, and it's something you can trust. Even though our memories can fade, right? Because we've just been talking about that. If you continually work to have those experiences and set the environment to have those experiences, then those become stepping stones so that faith builds, and you can trust that because you feel it like time and time again.
I like that. And it seems like your practice, I really like what you're saying here, this active remembering. Your process, one of the things I've been impressed with, you've been writing your journal consistently for so many years, which is a great example. That's actually a practice of memory training. You're actually capturing the moment in detail as you write it down. What a great thing to practice.
Yeah. No, that's been something that I think has given me, benefited me more than I recognize at times, right? And discussing topics like these, I think, helps me realize that not just in the fact of recording something for, my posterity or somebody else in the future, but even for me, and not even just looking back in the future at some point, but just the act of recording it helps me remember these things and helps me also appreciate and reflect on, the things I'm grateful for each day and through the past. And I think it's interesting because writing in your journal is a mechanism that helps with memory, as well as sharing things. Like when people share their experiences, spiritual experiences, their testimony, that doesn't only help reinforce and strengthen that experience, because you're doing a service and helping somebody else, it also creates, it exercises that muscle in your brain and it helps it remain strong over time. And I think that's really cool.
I think so too. This part about remembering and recording, I just want to share an experience. So sometimes I'll go and present in different areas of the country. And sometimes I'll have, 30, 40, 50, 60, sometimes 70, sometimes even a couple hundred people in a room. And one of the things that is interesting that you talked about recording, when people start coming into this room before the presentation, often I'll go and introduce myself and I'll ask them their name. And what I'll do is I'm not very good at remembering unless I write it down. Like you said, I have to write it down. So I actually will get two or three names at a time, and then I'll go up to the front, and most people don't notice I'm doing this because they're on their phone or their iPad or the computer or just talking. But I'll write down two or three names at a time, and then go get some more and write them down. And while they're trickling in, I'm sitting there having to recall, like you said. I'm saying, okay, well, that's Jack and that's Susan and that's Bob and that's Kimberly or whatever it is. And then when I end up starting the class, if I've really gone back and practiced and I have to have written it down, I can remember the people in the class. And so we're having discussions and people are blown away. They think I have some mind jujitsu, like jujitsu memory trick, or they think I have like this amazing memory. The truth is, I probably don't have a memory any better than anybody else. But if I actively work on it, if I actively go back and remember, so literally I'm kind of playing flashcards with people's names, and then when we have the presentation, I can remember the people's names in the room. But it's not because I have this exceptional memory, it's because I'm actively trying to do it. And I think that's what this whole spiritual piece, has a component to. Like if I'm actively journaling, if I'm actively sharing my spiritual experience, if I'm going to church, if I'm praying and I'm remembering, then that's where the magic happens, not with just saying, letting it kind of flick off or even turning it off, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I like that you brought up those things, prayer, even the consistent study of scriptures, going to church, attending the temple, all of these things, as well as in Christian faith, in my own faith, in taking the sacrament or Passover or called many different things, right? It's very much focused on remembering, and each of these acts helps us to stay to reinforce those connections, those to remember in our brain, and to stay on that path of faith, where we then receive new experiences which reinforce and help us recognize that this is true. And I think it's important to bring up too, in many faith traditions, the Holy Ghost or Holy Spirit is a kind of one of his roles is to help remember too, as well as validating those spiritual experiences, as well as helping us know that, hey, that's something you can trust. It also helps bring things to memory. So I think it's important to recognize that while there's all this support for the scientific and psychological side of things in this paradigm shift that we're talking about, there's also a spiritual element to it, right? And both of those, when you experience this, come together to make it feel like something you can trust, you can move forward with, right? And that helps each of us in our paths, in our own faith.
Right. So here would be a counter argument to what we've been talking about. If memories can be changed, if you can actively forget something, why trust your spiritual experiences at all?
Yeah, great question. I think we touched on this a little bit before. If memories can be changed, it doesn't mean that they didn't happen, right? I think everybody, even those who have left the faith, their own faith, they recognize that there were spiritual experiences in the past that they've had. Now, some maybe didn't have, or maybe that wasn't a part of their experience from before, but many it is, right? And I don't think it's that they deny that those experiences happened, but is that reframing, reshaping, or even fading of those memories that takes place, right? So, like we just mentioned, there's that aspect of memory, which is important, but that doesn't invalidate if memories change or fade, it doesn't invalidate that something happened. Now, the part of the faith side of things, the spirit is something that goes beyond just the physical and the scientific method kind of discerning truth or looking for truth. That aspect of things plays that important role where we can feel that validation that this is something trustworthy, that is something that's true, right? We can learn by faith as well as by study. And they're not in conflict with each other. Science and faith, 100 science in its pure form and faith in its pure form, truth derived from both of those. are, I believe, eventually going to be the same thing. They're going to point to the same direction, right? They're just two different methods of discerning truth. And I think those play together. And so when faith, or when our memories might fade, and when those can come into question, it doesn't, just the fact that they can fade doesn't invalidate that they were true, that it happened, that they can be real.
So let me ask you one more question, Bryce. Why would God put us in a situation where we have to have faith instead of just scientific evidence? Like, what do you think?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. That's something. When I lived in Mexico, I was a missionary for my church for 2 years, and spent my time there trying to help people with their faith struggles as well, or to come to know about Heavenly Father, about God, and also just giving service. And something I wondered often is, like, why do we have to walk by faith? I mean, that's a common theme in most any faith, right? And it's something that we see in all of our lives, that there are things that we just don't know yet, but we have to trust, right? If we're going to make decisions and move forward. And I think there's a growth to that. Not being able to see everything as it is all at once means that we have to trust that there's something beyond this, and recognize that we're mortal. We don't have all the answers right now, and trusting something else helps us to make progress. And I think one of the big takeaways too that I came to when I was pondering, thinking through this, is that it allows us to love better, actually. Because if we don't see everything from end to end, what's our motive, right? We can trust it, but it helps encourage us to trust it, not just because we're going to get something out of it, because we know that, if I do this, this is going to happen, I get some kind of reward. But if we're acting on faith, it becomes much easier for our motive to become love, and doing it out of love, whether it be for God, or also for, our fellow brothers and sisters, our fellow humans, people around the world, and say, like, I don't know all the answers. I don't know 100% how this is all going to work out, or if every good act I do will turn out being good, or, coming back and helping me somehow. But I'm going to do it because I love God. I trust Him. I'm going to do it because I love the people around me. And it gives us space where that love can grow. And so there's a lot of things. I think that's one part of it. I think there's a lot of other parts of it, parts that I don't understand yet. But faith has a very redeeming and a very important role in helping us to grow and learn and become better people.
Absolutely. And I was talking to a relative of mine about this some time ago, and she said, if we could totally comprehend God's thoughts, would he really be God? Because that means we'd be on the same level as he is, right? I mean, if you could literally comprehend everything that God could comprehend. I mean, think about it as a dad, we can think about this. My children, they were young, they didn't know anything. I mean, when I say don't know anything, they couldn't walk. We had to help them do everything. Could they really understand calculus at age two? Probably not, Could they understand the intricacies of like how weather patterns work and how machinery works and all these things? No, they don't even know how to talk, And I think in some ways, God is so far ahead of us that we do need to trust that even though right now we don't understand and we might be like little babies, right, who barely can walk, that there's other things that he does understand. And that the real purpose, as you said, is to help us love more. He's in the business of joy. He's in the business of helping us have joy and really true love, not just worldly love or romantic love or that kind of thing, but real true Christ-like love is the main goal. Glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I love that. And I love what you brought up with, just because we can't comprehend something or understand it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. That's not possible, right? I feel like a lot of times counterfaith arguments are kind of based on that fallacy of, if you can't understand how it works, or if there's no evidence for how it works according to what we understand, what functions, what, laws and things are in order, then, it's not worth trusting. It's not true. But science, even the scientific method, depends on us disproving things, not proving things, right? So it's kind of a flip. And just like For example, black holes or other things in space, right? We couldn't see them, we couldn't detect them. No one knew they existed, just a few centuries ago. But now we have the tools to discern them and to see them, and we know they exist. Now, that doesn't mean, a few centuries ago that they didn't exist, and then they all of a sudden came into existence. It just means that we just developed the tools to be able to discern that, to be able to understand that better. And there are spiritual tools in the side of faith, as well as scientific method and that side of things that help us to discern truth and help us to find things, right? But if we develop and spend time on the faith side of our lives and develop a relationship with God, those tools can help us discern truth better and better. And just like a telescope is an aid to us, the scriptures and prayer and all of these other things not only help us remember, they also sharpen that tool to be able to discern spiritual truth and be able to have both of them come to line up with each other. And that's something in my experience in academia, in the schooling that I've undergone, right? The more I've understood things from a scientific perspective, the more my faith has actually been strengthened because I see that both work in line with each other. I believe that all things testify of God because of you can see how both can work in harmony with each other. The more you're educated in faith or in science, or education that we can have in the world today, the more things can connect and can make sense. This has been my experience.
I love that, and I just need to bring this up because as you were talking, we were talking about you brought up science, and in speaking with a lot of people who have had a faith crisis, a lot of times they'll bring up a scientific something or other, and one of the things that as I've studied this and even spoken with a great there was a great man named Brent Slife, and he is a good man. He's a professor, and he would help people find the actual biases that people sometimes couldn't see. And he said, even in science, people like to say that it's objective. But the truth is, science is biased because it says if I can't observe it or I can't measure it, then it's not worth studying. If I can't observe it or I can't measure it, it's not worth studying. Well, think about it from that baby perspective. Can I measure and observe things that are happening way outside of my mental realm when I'm 2 years old? Do you know what I'm saying? Can I understand, like we use calculus as an example. Can I understand how forces like and what science is saying is if it's not observable and it's not measurable, then it's not worth studying. Well, is it possible that there are things that are not observable and that are not measurable?
At least by science, right?
But at least by science. I mean, can you tell me how many units of love you felt this last week? I mean, tell me in exact terms how many units of love you feel for your spouse or you feel for your child. You can't observe it, you can't measure it. Does that mean that love's not real? Can you how many units of faith do you have at this moment? I mean, we've got to realize that just because it's not observable, just because it's not measurable, does not mean it's not super, super important as we talk about faith.
No, that's true. I mean, even it many people recognize this. We believe these truths to be self-evident that all men were created equal, right? That in of itself, a truth, I think that's everyone something everybody agrees with today. But there's no way to scientifically back that, I guess, right? There are certain moral truths and things which we come to understand that, yeah, there is no kind of way to quantify or to discern. And I think it's important to recognize too, and even in scientific theory, it's just that theory. There are hypotheses, and then there's theories, like for example, Newton's laws of physics. For a long time, those were held to be, okay, this is kind of the truth, but they're always considered just a theory because later what happens, Einstein comes along, right? Theory of relativity. And that's like, okay, actually, Newton's laws were flawed. They don't hold up when you look at such things like, space and you go out beyond this world, right? On a
Right.
bigger scale. And even that over past years has been refined, and people have found, okay, there's more to this than we knew, right? It changes some of the things which we thought we understood. And I think that's key to understand that In scientific theory, there are things which we don't understand, and to recognize that we might have a perspective now, but just because we don't have the evidence yet doesn't mean that it can't exist. There's still the possibility of learning new things and of discerning things later that weren't once discernible, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And it's possible. Is it possible that we're just like little babies who don't understand calculus yet, who don't understand Newtonian physics or Einsteinian physics or anything else? And I really like the example you used. I think Newton was probably very sincere and tried to figure these out and came up with brilliant mathematical models. But even as a leading, we could call him scientist in his day, other things were found later that show that that Newtonian physics, those equations do not apply in all situations. The math doesn't work when you get really big or really small or near the speed of light. The math breaks down. So we thank him for his contributions, but he didn't have the whole picture. Just kind of like when we're little babies, we may learn to walk, but we still don't know how to maybe speak a few different languages or understand math or anything like that. So that ability to have faith and say, you know, I don't understand everything yet. And just because I can't observe it, just because I can't measure it, doesn't mean it's not important.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's key because a lot of times, you know, if we talk about cognitive dissonance in regards to history or say there's something in science which right now says, oh, something in scripture couldn't be true, right? According to our understanding of science. Well, I think it's important to stay the path, to hold on to faith, because often see, and even in just the past, you know, decades, that science catches up and that there are things that we come to discover that then discount that theory and say, oh yeah, you know, we didn't know that there was this evidence. These archaeological things that were discovered or whatever it might be. But now that it's all of a sudden coming into line with, you know, the faith-based truths which you have. And so I'd say, you know, just as a caution, be very weary to trust science more than trusting faith. If you've had those spiritual experiences, hold on to them, remember them, try to create an environment where you can continually have them, because those are just as valid, or if not even more valid, because they come directly from the source than what we're discerning with our kind of baby tools, if you say, right? What we've been able to figure out and kind of come up with to try to find truth. If you know there is a way to receive truth from directly from the source, if there is a God and he wants to talk with us, what better way to be able to learn, especially some of these most important things about life that can't be discerned through science, love and sacrifice and all these other principles, which are truths, but truths which are much harder to discern through scientific method, those kinds of ways.
Great thoughts. Bryce, so grateful to have you on the show today. How can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, for sure. You can reach out to me. I have a social media pages, Bryce Barrett. You can send a request or say hi there. You can also message the YouTube channel or comment on the videos there and connect through there. But yeah, I'm happy to chat with anybody who might want to talk about these kinds of topics and things.
Great. And that's Bryce Barrett with two R's and two T's, Berrett. And your
Yeah.
YouTube channel is called
The Mighty Change.
Change. Wonderful. So we appreciate you so much, Bryce, for bringing. We'll put those links to get a hold of you in the show notes for those of you who may be driving or otherwise. Thank you for being on the show. And it's been a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, thanks, Hussein. It's been a pleasure to be here with you.
Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you.